You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network. Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Prairie Punk House Companion. This is our third episode. I'm Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear.
This is the episode where we start talking about punk houses, actual punk houses. This episode, we're going to focus mostly on Wichita, because that's where we started. Those were the first punk houses we lived in when we moved out of our folks' house. And that just kind of makes sense to start there. This is the episode where the show grows its beard.
I have a beard.
I also have a beard. Your beard is significantly shorter.
Yeah.
And so is mine. Yours is almost gone.
No, it's just gray, so it looks like it's gone.
Okay. My beard is still ginger, so you can see it.
And there's that motorcycle. That was a motorcycle that went by, so...
Yeah. Does he just go up and down your street?
I think so. So I'm recording in my dining room tonight. I'm recording upstairs where there's more traffic noise. But it wouldn't be a punk rock podcast if there were not horrible recording. And
we keeps it real, man. I am sitting in a closet using two TV trays and a dining room chair, and I, no kidding, live about 5 miles from an international airport, so there will be episodes where you actually hear aircraft going overhead. You know, before we really get started, we're going to be talking a lot about drinking and partying. There will be mentions of drug use. We were drinkers, but we definitely knew people who used drugs. We're not going to mention any names specifically, but there will be mentions of all these things. We always mark these as explicit, and we straight up said this is not for young ears. This is a podcast for adults, and mostly for adults who are part of the same punk scene we were. So I'm talking about like people, you know, from about 35 to 55 years old. We'll do that nice 20-year age range there. But adults, people who are solidly in their adult years. We can't stop anyone else from listening to this, obviously. But if anybody does, we both would like to say our own messages about how we don't necessarily condone any of the things that we've done in the past. I do still drink. I don't drink to excess anymore. But I never had a problem with alcohol. I was definitely a drunk. But I was never an alcoholic. My addiction was cigarettes. I quit smoking those because, you know, fuck the tobacco companies. Don't give them your money. I definitely drank a lot and to excess. I still have the occasional, you know, craft beer. I'll go to a punk show a couple of times a year and stand in the back and drink my craft beer and watch the kids slam into each other. But that's not really the world that I'm a part of anymore. And Jerbear, you can talk about your side of that too, because I know I do still have the occasional drink. You do not, however, drink at all. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been sober coming up on 10 years. It'll be on July 18th will be 10 years alcohol free. Most of the time frame that we're discussing, I was in active alcohol addiction. These are frank conversations. I'm not really going to sugarcoat it, but also just because I did these things doesn't mean I condone it, obviously, since I'm sober now. You know, just bear in mind that these are fun stories, but these weren't always fun times. It was pretty dark times for both of us. And, you know, part of dealing with our situations was to self-medicate. You know, I don't really suggest people do that. And if you do need help or want to get help, reach out to somebody. You know, when I got sober, I tried 12 steps. It wasn't really for me, but I had a sober buddy and we went to lunch once a week and it really, really helped. So if you have somebody and, you know, you're in that situation, reach out. And if you don't have somebody, you can hit me up. I'll do what I can. So yeah, that's about it.
And there will also be a lot of mentions, I assume, of drunk driving by a lot of people that we know, probably including us, allegedly. What's the statute of limitations on that?
I don't know. luckily, I did. I wasn't driving in Kansas City or Lawrence, so I don't have to worry about that.
That's true. I absolutely do not condone drunk driving at all. Every time I think about any time I got behind the wheel after alcohol, allegedly, it is painful to think about. And even though I absolutely despise the gig economy and I hate companies like Uber and Lyft, they are necessary at times.
Especially in Kansas.
Well, especially in Kansas, because in Kansas, there's not a big taxi culture. Even in Kansas City, even in the big old city of Kansas City, there's not a big taxi culture. It's not a city where you can flag down a taxi and hop in. I do encourage any listeners who live in major cities like Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, if you actually live in any of the cities and listen to our little podcast, first of all, welcome. And second of all, there is this app called Curb. I don't know who owns it, but you actually do with this app Curb, and they are not paying me any money. You hail an actual medallioned taxi. It works the same way as Uber and Lyft, but you actually get a real taxi driver, medallioned taxi driver, who actually makes a real living and has benefits and stuff like that. So I highly encourage you, when possible, if you need to get a car and you live in a city that has something like Curb, or you can just hail a taxi if that's something that you're able to do, I highly encourage you to use actual taxis over services like Lyft or Uber. That being said, if all you have access to, like if you're in Wichita or Topeka or, you know, Jefferson City, Missouri, or somewhere like that, then for the love of God, don't get behind the wheel. Just suck it up. Use Uber. Use Lyft. Do not get caught driving drunk. Just don't do it. I think I went on my tangent long enough. Also, if you live in a major city and you have public transportation, use public transportation.
I hear public transportation is getting better in Kansas City. Certainly better than when we lived there. I don't have personal experience with it, but I've heard
it's that a low bar.
A lot better.
Yeah.
Well, it was already better than Wichita.
But if you do live in a city that has a public transit network, I know Chicago's is $2.25 for a ride. That's super cheap. Just use that. Use your public transportation. Barring that, use a taxi. Barring that, use Uber or Lyft or one of those other services.
I used to sleep in my car when I couldn't drive home. Not a great idea, but...
If that is your only option, then do that. Don't drive and make sure that if you are in your car, right, keys cannot be in the ignition, and do not even get in the front seat. Get in the back seat. Don't even sit in the front seat. They'll get you on a DUI if you're even sitting in the driver's seat. Trust me when I tell you, if you don't know this already, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know this. The cops will find something to get you on if they can. They'll find anything to get you on if they can.
ACAB.
Right. This isn't a podcast about cops, though. Well, that'll be a different one.
We should do an episode about our experiences with the police and how our white male privilege saved us from probably getting killed by the police.
Oh man, did it ever. I have truly done some dumb stuff. So when Aaron joins us next time, he has a great story about cops at Town Westmore. I don't even think they're real cops. I think they're rent-a-cops, actually.
Probably.
We'll see what he can remember of his cop stories. I'm sure, actually, he was, oddly, I think he was more sober than we were most of the time, so he probably actually does remember. Maybe he wasn't? I don't know.
When I talked to him today, he's like, man, I'm going to have a hard time remembering. It's like, that's what we're there for. We're here to fill each other's gaps.
Why? can you phrase that differently?
No. I am here to fill your gap.
That's okay, that's the slogan. That's the slogan for the podcast. We're here to fill your gaps. real quick, I do want to plug our website. Please visit us at www.prairiepunkpress.com. You can get on all the apps that have our podcast. You can find our Patreon page or our Ko-fi page or any other pages that you want to find. And you can also read about upcoming projects that are slated for the future. I say slated because nothing's guaranteed in this world, I guess.
So we just started promoting the podcast, and I want to thank everybody that started listening and downloaded and followed us and all of that. It's humbling. I'm really excited to do this and stoked to see people listening to it, and hope people remain excited and entertained by this. You and I have talked for our entire friendship about various creative endeavors, and you know, we dabbled here and there, but it's really good to not only do this project with you, but also talk to you almost every day now. On the last episode.
Oh, yes. So, corrections.
I mistakenly attributed the book I was reading to Dennis Leary, and clearly I meant Timothy Leary. Though I would like to read a book by Dennis Leary about an existential crisis. That sounds entertaining. Alas, it was Timothy Leary. It was his last
book. I'll go even further and say, I not only would read a book by Dennis Leary about existentialism, I would listen to the audiobook narrated by him on existentialism.
I want that to happen now.
Dennis Leary, if you are one of the couple of dozen people who listen to this podcast, please write a book on existentialism and then do the audiobook.
We can record it for you. What did you fuck up last week?
Last episode, okay, so I have one correction, potential correction for last episode. So I did refer to the United Kingdom as a country. For our UK listener, I deeply apologize. So the United Kingdom is not really a country. The United Kingdom is a state that's made up of countries. So England's a country, Wales is a country, Scotland's a country, and Northern Ireland is a country. All together, they make up the state of the United Kingdom, which is just called the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, which is kind of cumbersome. It's kind of a long name for a nation state. One more correction. I completely forgot about this. So I couldn't remember the name of my fake band
that played at the Rainbow House
with your band. So Joe messaged me after listening to that episode, and said that we were the Crooked Grin reformulation. I thought that we were going by the name Van or Astro Van. that was the name we were going to go by if we'd stayed together. But because
Van
we broke
Astro
up right
Van is fucking brilliant. I love that.
So, because we broke up at the end, I think we broke up in the middle of the last song.
We never
actually got to change the name to Van or Astro Van. That's the band I wanted it to be, but it was because I had been the dancer for Crooked Grin. We got into our head that we would do a Crooked Grin reunion, and I was the only one who answered the call. And then I just grabbed a drummer and bassist that I knew to come play with me.
Yeah. That was a fun
night.
And
then we broke up on stage. And that was a lot of fun.
Who won the Battle of the Bands that night? Because, you know, there was just the two of us. I'm pretty sure it was Explosion because I was in the band.
I feel like we all lost.
We all lost. No way, dude.
We all lost that
one. We had so much fun. I could only remember the lyrics.
You had a banner up. You had a banner up, and I ripped it down.
Yeah,
I think I pissed on it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was really drunk. I took it outside to piss on it, though. I didn't want to disrespect the Rainbow House by pissing inside. I'm a very polite
punk.
Nobody would have known. It was in the basement, so nobody would have known. But I was trying to be polite, so I did take it outside before I pissed on it. But I was very intoxicated, and I can't believe that I can even remember anything about that night.
I can only remember the lyrics to one of our songs that night. And the rest of the time, I was just screaming gibberish. Nobody knew. So it was fine.
I did not remember any lyrics. I was screaming. I mean, we were a punk band ish.
Ish, yeah. I don't know what kind of band we were. It wasn't, I don't know, Screamo?
Yeah.
Maybe? I don't know.
So what year did you move away from home and move into your first punk house?
So I didn't actually move out. I still lived with my mom during the Kansas Street days, but I was just there all of the time. So I was 19 when I met the Fannings and when we started our band. And let's see, the first night I met them, we'll start there. It was Riverfest, 97. And I went with my high school friends and we got separated or whatever. For those that don't know, Wichita has a huge party for like a week. It used to be in May. And on one of the nights they had a block party and they shut down a mile of Douglas Street, which is one of the main streets in Wichita downtown area. And 50,000 people would go downtown and party. I went and got separated from my friends and from high school who weren't punks, and found punk rockers at Stoner Hill, and they happened to be the Twins. I hung out with them. Sean and his girlfriend had just broken up, and he was very drunk and very unhappy about it. So I gave him a ride to 2721 and dropped him off, and I think he pissed himself and puked in the bushes, as you do. And then I left, and I was really annoyed, but Aaron was there, and we talked about music all night, and you know, I think that's when we decided that they should be an Uncle Scam. So we exchanged information because there were no cell phones back then. You had landlines and you had to write down phone numbers or memorize them. So we exchanged information so we could communicate, and then they got their phone turned off. So we just wound up running into each other again and then figured out a way to communicate and started having band practices. And then they moved into Kansas Street maybe July that summer. It just became chaos almost immediately. So yeah, it would have been summer of 97. And that summer,
that's my first memory of the Fannings, is that they never had phones that worked.
Yeah,
that's my earliest memory.
Yeah,
they just could not keep a phone on.
Nope, their phones were always shut off. And that summer, that was a pretty scary summer. South of Wichita, there are two suburbs, the closest one being Derby, and then about 5 miles or so south of that is another suburb called Mulvane. And in between Derby and Mulvane that summer, I guess some fucking piece of shit had a bunch of land and was throwing a white power music fest. I don't know if you remember or not, but all along I-135 that summer, for like a couple weeks to a month, I would see boneheads on the side of the highway with like banners with swastikas and hate-filled messages and stuff talking about their music festival. It was really fucking weird. Yeah, I didn't have any run-ins with them then, but they were there, and that was my first exposure to Nazi skinheads, was seeing them on the highway that summer. So we started hanging out at Kansas Street, and it just became chaos almost immediately. And then Jason moved across the street, the Kansas Street apartment. It was still on Kansas Street, but we didn't call his apartment Kansas Street. Yeah, so we kind of floated back and forth between there and basically partied every night. You lived there for a little while. When did you move in there?
I lived in the same building as the Fannings. I lived like two apartments under them. I lived in, I called my unit the Roach Motel. There were roaches that I could feel them at night crawl across me. There were so many roaches. The kitchen was unusable because you couldn't keep food. And any food that you put in it was just, I mean, even more roaches would just come flooding in. There was this weird weird lump in the closet in the bedroom too. That was, I don't know if this is true. I didn't live there, but somebody told me after I moved out, because apparently somebody knew who told me that they found a body in the closet.
So I don't know
if that's true. Take that with a grain of salt.
No, well, here's what I know is that when the Fannings moved in there, because they moved in a couple months before you, you and I weren't even hanging out at that point. I didn't really, I knew who you were, but we didn't kick it.
That was the first time I started hanging out with you, was at the Fannings apartment, because you were always over there, and I could just walk up a flight of stairs and be at their apartment.
Yeah, so. But what the apartment manager told them when they moved in was that somebody unalived themselves in there, and he found them.
Oh, okay.
That apartment Maybe that's manager what it is, then. Was an unreliable narrator, as they were a drug addict and a drug dealer themselves. So, and he also liked to fuck with people, so he could have just been trying to scare them. Hard to say.
I will say that my rent there was, I'm not kidding, $95 a month.
And you got what you paid for.
Yeah.
I did. They were the dingiest apartments that were legally rented out to people that I've ever experienced. I've seen grosser squats, but not many.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, everywhere we lived was pretty much slumlords. That was one of a handful of places that when my parents came to visit me, my mom cried as she walked away. I desperately wanted to move out of my parents' house when I was not even quite 18, I was still 17. When I was 17, Jake and Aaron M. Got an apartment at this place called Oliver Square in South Wichita, South Oliver.
Okay, yeah.
And I started hanging out there all the time because I knew them from high school. They were a grade above me, but I mean, we were all basically close to the same age. They were only about 6 months older than me, I think. So I was like right there. I was almost 18 years old. And I turned 18, and my parents made me promise that I would get my high school equivalency before I moved out of the house. So I turned 18, got my high school equivalency, and as soon as I got my high school equivalency, I left. And, you know, I moved into... So Oliver Square had kind of disappeared at that point. I did still hang out there after I turned 18. It was just debauchery, just drunken debauchery. We would drink anything we could get our hands on. None of us were 21, so we kind of had to drink what we were given. And there was one night I drank 10 bottles of Boone's Farm.
Oh my God.
Because we ended up with just a shitload of Boone's Farm. I don't know how we ended up with a shitload of Boone's Farm, but we did, and it was alcohol. So I drank it, and I think it was Aaron's idea.
Probably. That sounds like
it. Because it sounds like him. Yeah. Well, yeah. But it was his idea to get a bunch of cardboard and go out to the parking lot of Oliver Square, which was not in a nice neighborhood. And he decided that we were going to have a boombox and we were going to break dance. And so we're just sitting there drinking Boone's Farm, smashing bottles in the parking lot, and break dancing to, like, Run DMC or something. I don't remember. Whatever we had on cassette tape, basically. And that is probably the best way I can describe that apartment. I desperately wanted to move in there. Don't know why. I just really wanted to get to my parents' house. But before I could move in, they moved out of there. I don't remember where they moved to next. Or I think Aaron M. moved in with us on Harry.
Yeah, 2721, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't remember if Jake... Did Jake live on Harry?
Yeah. Well, from what I remember, Aaron M. has told me some stories about that. The only thing I know about 2721 is that like 20 people lived there, and the only light in the whole apartment was in the bathroom, and it was a red bulb, and Aaron used to butcher his face trying to shave for work at the gas station.
Yep.
There. Yeah. And that's about all I remember.
Multiple people in the house who had mohawks, and we all wanted to spike our hair up in the one bathroom. So you got Jake, me, I think Aaron F. had a mohawk
he did.
At that time.
Yeah, he did.
I think Sean probably did too. Or Sean always did like the Liberty Spike thing.
Sean had the most fucking luscious cheese dick metal hair I'd ever. It was like down to the middle of his back, and it was wavy, and it was very silly for a punk rocker.
He at some point he cut it though, and he started doing like these Liberty Spikes, like just all over.
I mean, he had a mohawk too. It may have been there. Well, when I hung out with him at Riverfest, he had a mohawk then, and it was in Liberty Spikes. I think he had like a trihawk. So
we had, I think, at least three people per bedroom. There were two bedrooms, one bathroom. I think our rent was probably $150, $160, something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like almost nothing, and we still had trouble making it with like 20 people. I think I was one of only a couple of people who actually, well, Aaron M. had a job. He worked at the gas station.
Right.
Jake had a job. I don't remember where he worked. And I think that's when I was working at, Opie's Pizza and Grill.
Yeah, I was
going to
say it was Opie's, probably.
I was still a short order cook at that time, but because we were just spending so much money on alcohol.
Yeah.
And cigarettes and just
records.
Junk. Records and... keeping like instead of saving up money to buy a car that would actually run, I just kept dumping money into that shitty. I'm trying to remember what car I had at
Hyundai
that point.
Yet.
No, it wasn't the Hyundai. I think I had that
little truck.
No, I'd already. So the truck was originally my dad's, and he told me I had to either buy it from him or give it back. I could not afford to buy it. So the truck.
Yeah.
Truck was red.
Okay.
But I think that might have been when I had the Audi. I had an Audi, which sounds nice, but it was like a 1980. The clutch would stick to the floor, so I would shift gears and then have to jam my foot under the clutch and pry it back up every time I shifted gears. So the car was just torture to drive. Just absolutely, I hated whenever somebody needed a ride somewhere, I was just like, fuck. Seriously? God damn it. Fuck, I gotta drive this thing now. Like, nice. It was just, it was like jerky, and I had a bad mohawk, and I was like, I'm gonna get fucking pulled over.
So, my car at the time, the beginning of Kansas Street, I had a bright orange 72 bug, and I had a foot tall mohawk, and I'm 6 foot five. So I had to cock my head to the side to drive. But we would have band practice in my mom's basement. And I was the only one with a car because the Fannings couldn't keep a car or a phone. So I was the only one that could drive. And there were four of us in the band. And people always wanted to come hang out with us. So I would... My car's name was Fritz. So we would fill Fritz six deep with punk rockers, go from Kansas Street to my mom's house and have band practice, and then go back to Kansas Street and party. So one time we were going, I think we had a show that night and we were getting ready. I don't remember what, but we had six people in Fritz, and Sean was in the back, and he had a super long, skinny chain on his wallet. And for those that don't know, the battery of a Beetle, old Beetles, is under the back seat. And his wallet chain slipped in between the backrest and the bottom of the seat and hit the battery and shorted my battery out in the middle of, I think we were on First Street downtown. So I like killed my car. So I had to pull over and figure out what the fuck was going on. We all got out, and Sean's wallet chain was melted in half, and like he touched his chain and it burned his finger, and he was pissed off because we had a show that night and it was his left hand. So looked at the battery and it was fine, and my car restarted, but his wallet chain melted, and we had to repile all six of us back in my car. It's one of my favorite Fritz memories, is Sean burning the shit out of himself because he shorted out my battery.
That was a great car, and I think it was the perfect car for you because you are so tall and you had such big hair, and you were in just the tiniest car that it was. I remember that was when I first kind of hung out with you a little bit. You had that car, and I thought that's a bold choice. I thought the first time I saw your car, that is a bold choice for that man.
Was often reminded of the Simpsons episode where the really tall guy was in the really small car. Do you find something humorous about the choice of an automobile?
I had a, for a little while there, I think it was either before or after the Audi, I don't even remember now. I had an El Camino. Do you remember the El Camino at all?
No, I don't.
Yeah. It was rust red. Mostly it was just rust, uh-huh. I think. I think the entire car was made out of rust. The stereo didn't work. It had a Spark-O-Matic stereo in it, which is Spark-O-Matic, a real stereo brand.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm familiar with Spark-O-Matic.
It did not work. So I had a boombox. There was a boombox next to me uh-huh. in the only other seat in the car because it's
an El Camino.
An El Camino's two-seater. Right. So it was me and a boombox, and this is during my Mohawk phase. So I had my Mohawk straight up all the time, and El Caminos are kind of famously pretty low. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm not an extensively tall person.
No, you're short.
My Mohawk made me... Yeah, I'm average height. same height as Patrick Stewart and Paul Rudd. Thank you. but yeah, so I always had to cock my head to the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so back to the houses, I guess. So yeah, we lived on Harry Street. I don't remember how that apartment collapsed. I think it was just too many people. We had the Fannings on the couches and the floor,
and they moved into Kansas Street because they were sick of that fucking place.
Right.
So it would have been around June or July, probably.
Jason was living there.
Yeah,
remember Jason was living there at the same time. Jake, Aaron M, me, somebody's girlfriend.
Was it Aaron's? Aaron M?
Maybe.
Tim there?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I know.
Ah, I forgot about that too.
That was painful. That was a painful look.
I seriously completely forgot that guy existed until just now. I don't think I've thought about that man. I think he came over a few times. I don't think he lived there. He probably was crashing there, and I didn't even know. I didn't even fucking know.
Yeah.
Like, there were times where I just slept at work because I didn't feel like
it sounds like a horrible, horrible living situation. It sounds
like
dreadful.
I can't believe that we thought that many people crammed into a 800 square feet tops would be a great idea.
Yeah.
And then we'd always play. So we were right on Harry Street. I mean, we were on a busy street. But we would always go into the front yard. And I think this is another time when Aaron M. had another great idea. He always had the best ideas. So he invented this game called Alf Ball. I think it was him. It was either him or Jay.
Oh, yeah, one of them invented it. I remember that game.
And we had this elf, stuffed elf animal.
Uh-huh.
From the 80s sitcom Alf.
You know, I always thought he was saying Elf Ball.
Nope, Alf.
I see that now. Yeah. I always thought he was saying Elf Ball. Okay.
So, yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Alf is a 80s sitcom about an alien. It's a Muppet, basically. He ate cats. That was his thing. We had a stuffed animal version of him, and Aaron M. decided that we should go outside and play Alf Ball, and I don't remember what we used as a stick. I don't know if we had a wiffle ball bat or something like that. And we were playing right there, like right next to Harry. Mm-hmm. And we kept knocking Alf into the street. And people just run out and grab it because we were drinking. Because of course we were. Because we were awake.
Right.
I was 18. I was still 18 years old and barely. So if we were awake, we were drinking, basically. And we kept knocking Alf into Harry Street and running out there. And cars kept swerving and honking at us. And we'd flip them off like it was their fault. How dare you? Driving in the middle of our Alf Ball game. So if you're one of those drivers and you're listening to this, fuck you.
One of the games that we played on Kansas Street was Hide and Go Spank. Because we were in a spanking phase. It was a bunch of punk rockers in this neighborhood hiding. This is a shitty neighborhood. There were like shootings and stuff. It was rough. So we would go hide and whoever was it would have like a spatula or a wooden spoon or whatever, and if you found somebody, you know, you spanked them. And typically we would run, so it became a game of Spank Tag, and I think it lasted about a month, where we would do probably like Friday and Saturday nights for like a month. Would do that. There'd be about six of us probably, because people would come over and hang out, and we would convince them that this was the fun thing to do. I don't know if you were ever there for it.
I was, yeah. Absolutely. That was my second least favorite game that I've ever had to be dragged into at a punk house. The first least favorite one, we'll get into more in the Kansas City episode, but it was Tape Bat.
Oh, I've heard of Tape Bat. I'd never played Tape Bat, but I've heard of it.
You did.
I did?
You did.
I don't remember that.
Absolutely you did. Yeah, you probably don't remember it, but you were there.
I'm glad you're here to fill my gap.
Can we revisit?
I really don't remember that.
Can we revisit change of rephrasing?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. 100% no.
So you absolutely played Tape Bat because we were roommates at the time, and we were always at the Central House together. I don't think there may have been one or two times we went there solo because the other one had to work or something, but 90% of the time we were there together. So yeah, you were absolutely there for Tape Bat.
I mean, I must have been, because if you were there, I was there. Okay, well, you'll have to refresh my memory and fill my gap.
I'll be happy in the Kansas City episode to fill your gap.
There's a lot of gaps to fill.
There's so many. So little time to fill them.
So one of the other things at Kansas Street that was a jolly good time was I really pissed Sean off. Sean was not having a good night because Aaron and I decided to break every single glass item in the apartment by throwing it out the window, but not like chucking it. We would just drop it out of the third floor window because they lived on the third floor. And I don't know how they had other tenants there because we were so loud until 4 or 5 in the morning most nights. But yeah, one night Aaron and I decided we were going to break every single glass in that place. And so it was the north side window in the living room, and we leaned out. We spent, Jesus Christ, it had to be an hour throwing every single beer bottle from the recycle out the window. And then we went to plates, and then we went to glasses, like cups that they used in their house. We chucked them all out the window. We literally destroyed every piece of glassware in that apartment. And when we got done, I was leaning out the window because it didn't have a screen, so I was just leaning out the window looking at our handiwork, and I bumped the storm window that was open, and it just tilted back and smashed on my back. So the glass got its revenge on me by smashing on my back. Somehow I didn't get cut or lacerated at all, so we threw that out the window as well. And then Sean was so fucking pissed. He was so pissed. He was worried they were gonna get kicked out. Rightly so. But I mean, again, nobody
was going to live there.
Right. Who else was going to live there?
I mean, those were the shittiest. I lived in some pretty shitty houses, but as far as apartments go, those were the shittiest apartments I think I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, and I used to deliver pizzas for a living. For many years, I delivered pizzas for a living. So I've seen some shitty, shitty apartments.
So,
and those are still the worst.
One night, not long after that, Justin's brother Ty, he was I don't know, a squatter. He hopped trains and hitchhiked around the country, and he always came back to Wichita because he had family here. So he was in Wichita for this time it was probably about 3 months, and he hung out at Kansas Street all the time. And we'd been partying like all night. I woke up the next morning, I slept on the couch, and Ty was there, and he was going through the recycle and drinking all of the beer spittle that was left. And this recycle had not been taken out in well over a month, at least 2 months. And that beer in there was skunky and growing fuzz. And he was going through every single can, every single bottle. It didn't matter if cigarette butts were in it or not. He was going through there. He was fucking drinking the leftover beer. And just thinking about it puts a vomit lump in my throat. It was so fucking gross. And that was Ty. Oh, he wrote a song on Sean's guitar, but he had a spiky bracelet on, and it just put like a gash in Sean's guitar, about probably like an eighth of an inch deep in the wood. That's how hard he was playing. And I remember the lyrics, if you would like to hear it really quick.
Please indulge the crowd.
Ty Reynolds, original here, TM, copyright, all that. It was beer, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. 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 And he, you know, went on for a couple minutes doing that. But that was the song that he ruined Sean's guitar on.
Totally worth it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's a classic.
Yeah.
So Ty, later on, ended up being my roommate in another apartment that was off of Harry and Edgemore. So I lived with Ty
and Maya when
they were together.
I wonder what happened to Maya. I don't remember her last
name
either.
Maya was super cool. She was super cool.
It would be rad to see what she's up to.
Maya, if you are one of the 60, 70 some odd people who know about this now and you hear this, get in touch with us.
I think she's from Massachusetts, I think.
The last time I saw her was when they were living in Minnesota.
Oh, really?
And I went up to Minneapolis and ended up staying with them for a couple of days. I don't remember why, and I don't remember how I got a hold of them, I ended up...
Ty just probably found you at, like, a liquor store or something.
Probably. Ty always finds me. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if I find him, like, in my backyard later.
We hadn't seen Ty in easily 20 years, and we were in Lawrence for your bachelor party, and we were at the 8th Street Tap Room, sitting there, minding our own never mind. And I turn around, and there's fucking Ty walking into the tap room. Showed up to your fucking bachelor party. It was the fucking weirdest thing.
But I lived with him, Harry and Edgemore. So after that Harry Street apartment, I got my own place. I got a studio apartment further down Harry. I lived off Harry a lot. That was just the street that had cheap apartments, I guess. I left there, so I started dating somebody. She had a kid, so I couldn't really live in a studio apartment because she couldn't really spend the night there. So I got a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom down the street from there at Harry and Edgemore. And then eventually, because I'm really, really bad at making money at that point in my life, I had to get a roommate because I was like, well, I got a 2-bedroom. And I can't afford to live in this 2-bedroom for a little while. I had Melissa's boyfriend, Mickey.
Yeah.
He was my roommate for a while.
What was it?
Oh, God, I don't remember. What was his
fucking catchphrase?
I don't know.
He said it all the fucking time.
Melissa texted us. Yeah, let us know what Mickey's catchphrase was. He always had money to pay his half of rent, so I was like, whatever, I don't give a shit.
And that's, that's actually when you lived there, that's when you and I started getting... a lot closer, because that was the Fannings moved to Riverside. I started hanging out over there for whatever reason, and you and I, that's when you and I became like super close.
I think Aaron M lived there for a little while too. He might have just lived on the couch, but he might have had the room, or I think he had the room for a while, but he could never pay rent, so he said he would move to the couch and I could get another roommate. That final roommate was Ty Reynolds. Ty and Maya needed a place to live, and so I rented my additional room to them. My brightest memory of Ty was one night I was laying in bed with my girlfriend at the time. It was very late at night, and Ty kicked open the door and was naked, head to toe, with a blanket over him. And he... stretched out his arms and the blanket dropped off, and behind him was a light, so he looked like an angel for a second. And the loudest voice he could muster, this is at like 2 a.m. mind you, he said, "Hey man, you got any fucking vodka?"
Get any vodka?
So, translation, hey, do you have any vodka? I think I said, get the fuck out of my room. And I shoved him out. I had to touch his naked body to get him out of my room. And then I slammed the door closed. Uh-huh. You know, those little like cheap hooks that you get at Home Depot. That was the door. That was the quote unquote lock.
Yeah.
Yeah. These apartments, I mean, these were slums. We lived in the slums.
So do you remember, there was another time I was there, sleeping on your floor. It had to be like 3 or 4 in the morning. And this girl comes over, is banging on the door, trying to come hang out. All the lights were off. Everybody was clearly asleep. And she was just chatting away at the door, trying to come in. And we were like, I think you and your girlfriend were in your room. And I was on the floor just like yelling at her. And I think eventually you had to come out and like open the door and tell her to leave.
There have been many, many times in the course of our friendship, especially that early part when we were living that lifestyle where I had to chase women away from you. That was one of them, where I, you know, I have to be like, hey, he's passed out, man. You gotta leave him the fuck alone. Like, what's wrong with you?
You had that apartment, and that was about the time where I actually moved out of my mom's, and I moved into the Sin Pica apartments. It was kind of rad apartments. It was really cheap, but the kicker was it had this porch. I lived on the second floor, and it had this enclosed porch, and it was just amazing. All the windows would open up, so it was like our smoking lounge. So I put a couch out there and had like a desk, and it was like a super chill hangout spot. And you know, we partied there quite a bit. I became good friends with Stewie there. He put on a lot of all ages shows earlier in the 90s, so he brought like the Get Up Kids and Boys Life to town, I think, and he helped with a lot of the ska shows with Nathan Gilson, who the two of them put on quite a bit of shows for a while. And in 99 Stewie passed away. He had some super rare heart condition. And he passed away, and then in 02, Nathan had a, December of 02, Nathan had an aneurysm and passed away. And Nathan Gilson wrote one of Uncle Scam's songs, and all I can remember is the chorus. But it went, I'm bigger and I'm badder and I'm madder than you. I'm higher and I'm drunker and I'm punker than you. Image replacing knowledge, replacing me, replacing you. So there's a little Uncle Scam action for you guys. Thanks to Nathan Gilson. At Sempica, you lived just like a block away in the Shirkmere.
Yeah. And that's right. And I had moved into
that vicinity. The Shirkmere. That vicinity is when we basically became like hetero life mates. And decided to move to Kansas City together.
It was like two blocks from each other tops.
Yeah.
So we were always walking between apartments, and that was around the time. So after I left that Harry and Edgemore, I moved out to El Dorado, and then I moved to Hutchinson for a little while with my girlfriend at the time. Things were not going great. And I moved, that was when I moved into the Shirkmere. I said I wanted to move back to Wichita, and we decided we probably shouldn't be living together. And I moved into the Shirkmere, but we were still together for a little while, but we ended up breaking up while I lived at the Shirkmere. Mm-hmm. And that was when, especially once I didn't, you know, have a girlfriend anymore, we started hanging out like every day at that point.
I would come over and play Medieval on your PlayStation, and we would drink enormous amounts of alcohol, you drowning your sorrows and me just being a drunk. And yeah, that's when we decided to move to Kansas City. I don't know what made it happen. I think you just wanted to leave Wichita.
I had wanted to leave Wichita ever since I moved to Wichita in second grade.
And my girlfriend at the time was going to KU, and Kansas City was closer. So I was like, yeah, sure, let's go up there. And at the time, I had a decent working class job. I worked at an offset printing company, and it was a union job, so I made pretty good money. I was able to save up, for me, what was a lot of money at the time, to move to Kansas City. I sold my van and had, a couple $100 saved up, and that allowed me the ability to move up to Kansas City and give me a bit of a cushion before I was able to find another job up there.
Opie's had gone out of business, and then I worked briefly
You were
at
working at
Arby's.
Little Squeezers, I think, because you would bring pizza home all the time.
Yeah, that was probably when I was the probably the first time I worked there. I worked at a couple different little Squeezers pizzas, both in Wichita and Kansas City. As a pizza delivery driver, you're really putting yourself out there. You are so vulnerable. So tip your drivers. We shouldn't live in a tipping society, but we do. So
So
while we
tip.
still do, fucking tip. Tip your drivers, tip your wait staff, tip your fucking bartender, tip your fucking barber, whatever. Tip, because these companies don't pay people shit. We should probably talk about before we moved to Kansas City. So the last place that we lived there, where I lived in the
Oh,
Shirkmere and
yeah.
Jer-Bear lived in Sempeka, you had a van. You had a van, didn't you? You had a
Yes, I
VW
did.
bus
His name was
named
Boris.
Boris. Yeah.
Boris.
You've got to have some Boris stories.
First, while we're on the Shirkmere still, my favorite thing about the Shirkmere, besides it being straight out of a horror movie and creepy as fuck, they had flyers all around the building for Schizophrenics Anonymous. And I just always struck me odd how one would 12-step their ways out of schizophrenia. I don't know if you know, but they kicked everybody out and it's condemned now.
Oh, is it condemned? I thought that I heard they were turning it into expensive condos. Is that not
I don't th that's not I haven't heard that, but maybe I'll look into it.
okay?
I'm not
I
sure.
mean, they might be tearing it down to build expensive
Yeah, maybe.
condos.
Yeah.
So, for anyone who doesn't know much about Wichita, which is probably most people who haven't been to Kansas, Wichita in the 90s was a really kind, especially downtown, was just
It was
deserted.
completely
It
deserted.
was,
There, you
yeah.
know, there, Coleman started in Wichita, Kansas, and there were like Coleman, the camping company, started in Wichita, and all their warehouses and factories had moved out of the downtown area. They moved out east, so all those buildings were completely empty. This is pre-gentrification, so there were just empty warehouses all over downtown. There was really nothing there. There was an art collective that bought a warehouse on Commerce Street, and they called it the Fish House. And that was kind of the first thing around there to start making downtown cool again. There were a couple bars. There was a coffee shop called the Bohemian Bean, and that was kind of the beginning of downtown Wichita's gentrification. But most of the time we were there, it was empty, just completely empty. So there was a lot of running amok and fucking around in abandoned warehouses
Lots of drinking in, yeah, like completely empty warehouses and old rundown parking garages, and yeah, you would see like homeless people, and that would be about, those would be the only other humans that
Yeah.
you'd see besides like the punks you were with. You just kind of run around and drink and like
Run
just
'em up.
break shit,
Yeah.
and
There
yeah.
very little run-ins with anybody that gave a shit down there. So
Right.
Boris, so I was hanging out with some of my high school friends all night. Hadn't hung out with them in a long time, so I went and hung out with them, and we were up all night partying. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning, and I go to Quick Trip at 13th and West Street, and I'm super hungover, and I go inside and buy a pack of cigarettes and pay for my gas, because that was before you had to do pay inside. You could fill your gas up at the pump and then go inside and pay for it. Inside, getting coffee, buying cigarettes, paying for my gas, and I noticed these six dudes walk in, and they just look kind of like your normal fall morning hunters getting back from, you know, deer hunting or something. They all had camo on and had a big dumb truck and shit. And I didn't really give them a second look until I felt somebody kick the back of my leg. I turned around and realized that they were all boneheads. So it was Taco John who kicked me in the back of the leg. I don't know why a bonehead was named Taco John. I don't know who named him that. That's just how I knew him. He was Taco John, the Nazi, and he was short, pudgy, and really fucking mean. And I had a patch on the back of my jeans that said, "Yo, bonehead, ram a bullet down your throat." And I had a little cartoon drawing of a bonehead with a gun in his mouth and his brains splattering out behind him. And that's what he kicked. And he was like, "Nice patch, buddy." And I turned around and looked at him and I was like, "Oh, fuck." So I went outside and I went to my car and they followed me out and they were like, "Get back here." I was like, "Fuck you," and flipped them off and got in Boris and tore ass down 13th Street and they all piled in their truck. And it was like a Bronco or a Chevy Blazer or something like that. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. And they chased me from 13th and West to like 2nd and Waco. And I was going like 60 in Boris, like on city streets, running red lights. And it's pretty curvy around there. It was horrific. It was very scary. I got away, but that was probably November. And for Christmas that year, everybody got me a weapon because it was going around town that since I ran away from them and didn't stay and fight six boneheads, I disrespected them and I disrespected punk rock. So they wanted to curb stomp me for running away. So everybody got me weapons that year for Christmas. I got mace and a smiley, and if you don't know what a smiley is, it's a thick chain with a padlock on the end of it. So Boris was just full of weapons after that. The other Boris story, we all went camping at a Boy Scout camp. Our friend Eric, who also passed away not too long ago, or I guess it's 4 years ago now, he had access to a Boy Scout camp and they had cabins there. So we were going out to these cabins for the weekend and we stopped at Dylan's to get groceries and it was pretty cold out and we were all going inside and, you know, we all had our mohawks up and had leather jackets with spikes all over them and patches on our pants and stuff. And I parked Boris. It was a 79 Volkswagen bus and this car full of like jocks or something drove by us and yelled something at us. I couldn't make out what it was. I don't know. So went inside and got groceries and came back out of Dylan's. Dylan's is a supermarket in Wichita. It's Kroger, other places now. But anyway, I went back out to getting Boris and they had spray painted with black spray paint on the side where the sliding door was. They wrote F word stoner bitches, which we thought was hilarious. Cause clearly since it was a VW bus, they thought we were hippies. And, you know, back in the, that would have been 97 also. In 97, you know, people threw that word, the F word, not fuck, around very freely. And we just thought it was hilarious that they thought we were hippies. And we thought a more appropriate tag on Boris would have been effeminate drunk assholes, because that was more descriptive of what we were. Luckily, it was cold enough that the spray paint didn't stick, it froze. So we went across the street to the same Quick Trip where the Nazis found me and got the washer, like the squeegees from the washers, and were able to get almost all the spray paint off of there. We played a show, Uncle Scam played a show at Borderline Skate Park, and this band from Oklahoma came up called Black Dahlia. So Black Dahlia came up and they just like gave us $100 and they were like, "Here, go to the liquor store and fill your van up." So Jason, who was 21, went and we went to Brother Man's, which was a liquor store by Kansas Street, and he went in and just spent the whole $100 on just a ton of booze. And back then, you know, we would buy 15 packs of Schlitz Blue Bull for $5. So he got a ton of those. We got some vodka, got some whiskey, got some rum, and we played a show with them there and just got completely loaded. That was a really, 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 really fun night.
I guess before we depart Wichita, I should probably go through the list of crimes that happened to me.
Oh, are we going to do crimes?
Yeah, we can do crimes by city.
Okay, all right.
I'm sure you probably have a couple, too.
Crimes that happened to me? No, man, I never got fucked with.
So I'll just go through a quick list. So, like I said, I delivered pizzas for most of my jobs from about 18 to, 30 years old, delivering food. Mostly pizza was my job. I was delivering pizzas for Pizza Hut in Wichita, and I went on this delivery, which was, you know, oddly enough, like two blocks from my high school. When back in the day, before people were paying with everything with credit cards, you kept a bag of money on you, $20 in mixed change and mixed bills, if you were a delivery driver, so that you could make change for people at the door. So I was delivering a couple blocks from my old high school, and I had just gotten my paycheck. And at the time, you could cash your paycheck at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You just go to the grocery store, you sign over to the grocery store, and they hand you cash.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I had like 400 and some change in my wallet, which in 1996 dollars was a lot. I don't know. We can sit down and do the calculation of how much that would be today.
But that
was
in 1996. It feels like $1,000 now.
So I had like $400 and some change in my wallet. And then I had my bag of $20 in mixed change that was Pizza Hut's money. Somebody came up to me. Somebody had ordered a pizza. And I went to the door, knocked on the door. Nobody was there. And I started getting like a bad feeling. Fuck. So I was like, okay, I just got to get the fuck back to my car. And on my way back to my car, two guys came down the sidewalk from opposite directions and came up to me and pulled a gun. And they said, give up your shit now. And so instinctively, I pulled the bag of $20 in mixed change because it sticks out of the back of your pocket.
Right.
You can't miss it. It's massive. It's a bank bag. And so I handed it to them and they ran off. And I got in my car and realized, oh, fuck, they didn't take my wallet.
Nice. So
I got away.
It has a happy ending.
It does have a happy ending. But yeah, they jammed that gun right. I mean, it was a real gun and it was jammed. It was not concealed. It wasn't a candy bar in the pocket.
Yeah.
It was, I saw the piece and it was jammed directly into my chest.
Jesus, dude. You've had guns pulled on you so many times. The only people that have pulled guns on me have been cops. So I was never afraid. That's that white privilege. Like as a white guy, when the cops pull a gun on you, you don't have to be afraid. You just kind of look at them like they're fucking idiots, but continue on with your crime stories. These are just delightful.
So, and then, so in Wichita, I've also been carjacked two times. One of those times I had passengers in my car. It was Liz
Georgia
and
Liz,
Georgia.
Right? Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That time that was, I'd already left Wichita at that point.
Yeah. That we lived in Kansas City. No, we lived in fucking Lawrence then. Maybe it was Sean's. Yep. No, I think it was Aaron's that white apartment.
And once again, they didn't have a fucking phone.
Yeah.
They did not have a phone. So I got carjacked. Somebody came up to, I don't remember who was sitting in the passenger seat. I don't remember if it was Liz or George in the passenger seat, but they came up. I think it was Liz. They came up and we had the windows down because it was fucking hot.
It was summer, yeah.
So we had the windows down and he came up and just held the gun like right at Liz's temple.
Oh, fuck. I thought it was on your side.
Nope.
Oh.
No, it was on Liz.
Fuck.
So he was like, I'll take your car. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
The fuck are you going to do?
That's a Hyundai,
what are you
going to
do? No, that was the Topaz.
Oh,
Mercury Topaz.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. So, yeah, I mean.
He got the car. I got it back the next day.
Yeah.
So I had to like go bang on one of Aaron's neighbor's doors and was like, can you call nobody had cell phones.
Right.
Nobody had a cell phone. Yeah. This was pre everybody having a cell phone.
2001, wasn't it?
Maybe 2002. Definitely before I had a cell phone though.
It would have been, I think it was probably 2001 actually.
Pre 9/11, I think.
Though. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was summer 2001. Because
it was summer. Yeah. It was summer. Yeah. Yeah. I just gave him my car. And, so I had to go tell Aaron's neighbor, I was like, hey, can you call the cops, somebody just carjacked me outside, and they found my car 2 blocks away from where it had been jacked. Everything was still in it. Nothing was wrong with
it.
Didn't
they steal
the keys? Were in the ignition.
CD?
They stole one of my Ludacris CDs, and I can't remember what else. A couple other ones. One of them was like a mix CD that somebody made for me that just had a bunch of really random shit on it.
Yeah, I remember one of
the
things.
So that one didn't make any sense.
One of the things they stole was super weird. I don't remember what, but it was like, wow, they're going to be disappointed by that.
Oh, yeah. they took my road atlas too.
Motherfucker.
I don't know, maybe they're planning a road trip and they're like, fuck, we don't want to take a road trip on a Mercury Topaz, but we'll take that atlas.
Gotta have an atlas.
And then the other time I got carjacked in, I think it was when I was driving my dad's truck, which was a stick shift. And this was when I was still in Wichita. I was still in high school, I think. Mm-hmm. Or I think it was after I dropped out, but I was still living with my parents. And I was driving once again down Douglas. I got carjacked on Douglas twice.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, by the way, my high school was on Douglas as well. Also, I got held at gunpoint about a block off Douglas, right by my high school.
Maybe
I should just stop hanging out around my old high school. It's Douglas, man. But yeah, so somebody, I was stopped at a traffic light and somebody came up and like opened my door and held a gun at me. And they said, you know, get out of the fucking car. And I did. And then I hear some gears grind. And then like, it's because it slopes
bastards.
Slightly downhill there, just ever so slightly. Not a lot of hills in Wichita, but it did slope ever so slightly downhill there. The car must have ended up in neutral because it just started sliding. And then I see the door open and the guy jumps out and runs. And so I just jog up to my car, jump in the driver's seat. And I put it in first gear and drive off.
Because he didn't know how to drive.
And I was just like, I didn't even report it to the cops. I was just like, what the fuck am I going to tell them? I got somebody carjacked me, but I didn't get carjacked. They're not even going to believe me. I had a green mohawk at the time. And I was like, I'm not going to deal with them not believing me and then fucking arresting me for lying to cops or some shit like that. So I just drove home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I did probably my punkest moment. This would have been, I think I was 16 years old. It was a New Year's Eve party we went to at the house of somebody I worked with at Pizza Hut. The only thing I remember is sitting down with a bottle of vodka, and then that's the last thing I remember. But what had happened after that was I apparently at some point, I had a curfew at the time because I was still a minor. My parents are very strict with that curfew. Mm-hmm. And everybody started freaking out because they had to get me home, but I was blackout drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And John was borrowing his parents' minivan for the night. And he decided that it was more important to get all the kids who lived out in Andover home first. Now, Andover is a suburb of Wichita, which is past my house.
Right.
So he had to have driven past my house to get to Andover. And then he got pulled over by the Andover police because he was speeding.
Of course,
on
Andover.
New Year's.
If you go to Andover, you're going to get pulled over.
Right. Andover is a upper middle class suburb. And if you're speeding, they will get you. The cop came over. He was shining his light on everybody, shined his light in my eye because I was obviously fucked up. Like there was just no denying it.
You just had the
there
flu.
Was no. I was just like just. about to just fucking like I was like barely coherent, and the cop shined his light on my face and opened the door and said, "What do we got here?" And then I projectile vomited all over the cop.
Hell yeah.
So
cut two,
I wake up I wake up in my bed the next morning, no idea how I got there. So my memory goes, I sit down with a bottle of vodka, I wake up in my bed.
Yep.
That's it.
Nice.
And I go upstairs not knowing what I'm going to expect.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I get upstairs, my parents are sitting on the sofa waiting for me. And I just think, fuck. Fuck. Okay, I didn't get away with it. Yep. Definitely got caught. The cops took me to Andover jail.
Oh, shit.
Yep. And then called my mom at like, my curfew was, I think, midnight. Or something like that. Or I think they made it 12:30 so I could like actually stay out for New Year.
Mm-hmm.
My mom got a call at like 2 a.m, not knowing where the fuck I was. And it was the Andover police saying, We have your son. We've arrested your son. He is blackout drunk, and he's in the drunk tank. So my mom had to come out and drive out to Andover at 2 in the morning to pick me up. I still get chills thinking about the look on my parents' faces when I walked upstairs, and I thought, well, I guess I'm not going out for a while. it's probably going to be a while before I can go out again. And it was. And real quick before we go, I do want to plug an upcoming podcast that we're going to be putting on our Patreon page. That's going to be Punk Rock Movie Reviews. And we'll do a quick trailer for that to explain it better. But basically, yeah, we're going to review punk rock movies, punk adjacent movies. We might get a little bit loose with the definition of what fits as a punk movie. But yeah, and then we're gonna rate them. We're gonna talk about them, and we're gonna do everything from comedies and dramas and documentaries. We're gonna try to have a wide variety of types of punk movies. There are, because punk itself is not a monoculture, so we're not trying to portray it as one. Yeah.
One of the ones I think we'll just have for a general audience will be the Outhouse documentary, since that is such a Kansas staple. I wouldn't want to put that behind a paywall.
Yeah. And I think we do want to thank SBK one more time for our theme song.
And now that we have all our socials out there and are publishing these, like, subscribe, follow us, do all that stuff. If you have money and want to support us on Patreon, that would be rad. We'll start movie reviews once there's people to watch them.
We are doing this on a shoestring budget. Like I said before, I'm sitting in a closet using two TV trays and a dining room chair in a closet to record this. But yeah, so give if you can. If you can't, enjoy. And contribute in other ways. Send in drawings. Send in stories. Send in something that you don't have to pay. You don't have to pay to contribute.
Yeah, for sure. I want to hear all sorts of stories. You can email us.
But do visit our website, www.prairiepunkpress.com. That's where you find all the links. That's where you can contribute by emailing us something, and on things like Facebook, you can just post stuff on our page.
Message us,
yeah.
Thanks for filling my gaps. Thanks for filling my gaps.
Yeah. Is that the new one? Is that the new outro?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Thanks for filling my gaps this week.
Yeah, I like it. I think it works. Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody.